gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you live from Los Angeles. Good morning, I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week. Great to be with you. Joined, and I hope the jingle's ready, as always, by the one and only, the brilliant, my friend, my mentor, my fellow tour mate, Hal Sparks.
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be? Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Yes!
Yeah. Hal, it's great to have you here on a not very funny day.
Yeah, well, not to worry. We're capable of dealing with the with issues of this depth, I think you and I will do just fine. It's interesting, though, that it does deal with, the underlying story of this is media and its power to motivate and I guess, be incendiary as well.
Indeed, and I think the underlying story is right-wing, extreme conservative religious fundamentalism on all sides of the spectrum, because a lot of finger-pointing is going on this morning with the attacks.
Right. Sorry, yeah.
That's okay. With the attacks, of course, on the Egyptian embassy, and, of course, the deadly attack on the Libyan embassy, which we just heard Jackie Schechner explain, killed our ambassador, Christopher Stevens, when militants stormed the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. Now, there's a Twitter meme going on that this was caused by Terry Jones, the pastor of the Dove Outreach Center, who's famous for burning the Quran back in 2010.
Right.
Terry Jones is not actually the man to blame for any of this, but there's a lot of people on both the left and the right pointing fingers. On the left is people blaming Terry Jones. Terry Jones promoted a film that was made by American filmmakers called Innocence of Muslim, directed by Sam Basile of California, who describes himself as an Israeli Jew. The film was produced in the U.S., though, and it's an outrageously anti-Muslim film.
Right.
Terry Jones promoted it. It was this film, which is insulting to the Prophet Muhammad and to Islam, that sparked the demonstrators to, early in the day, scale the U.S. embassy in Cairo and burn the flag and replace it with an Islamic flag. Later, of course, while we were asleep, the embassy in Libya was attacked, and Ambassador Stevens was killed. So these two distinctions are very important. The Egyptian attack was earlier in the day. Now, Terry Jones is being blamed for it again. He didn't do it. This is a crude film. It's poorly made. It's deeply offensive, and you can see clips from it all online. We're not going to play any of it today on the show. Because of the attack in Egypt, after the attack in Egypt, the White House came out and said this film was very offensive to Muslims, and they tried to just calm people down and say, hey, we're the U.S. government.
Yeah.
We know it's offensive to you guys. We don't like that.
Yeah.
Now, later on, of course, the attacks got deadly. So here's what happened with our Republican friends, and this is where the finger-pointing is coming from the right. Mitt Romney responded by saying, I'm outraged by the attacks on the American diplomatic missions in Libya and Egypt and by the death of an American consulate worker in Benghazi. Sentence number two, it's disgraceful that the Obama administration's first response was not to condemn attacks on our diplomatic missions, but to sympathize with those who waged the attacks. Now, of course,
that's
not what happened.
It's exactly the opposite.
That's a lie.
Yeah.
Reince Priebus, which all men over 50 should have checked every 6 months, said, tweeted, Obama sympathizes with attackers in Egypt. Sad and pathetic. Now, again, it's not true. Here is what President Obama actually said. I strongly condemn the outrageous attack on our diplomatic facility in Benghazi, which took the lives of four Americans, including Ambassador Chris Stevens. Right now, the American people have the families of those we lost in our thoughts and prayers. They exemplified America's commitment to freedom, justice, and partnership with nations and people around the globe, and stand in stark contrast to those who callously took their lives. Not to be outdone, former half-governor Sarah Palin got in on this, saying, apparently President Obama can't see Egypt and Libya from his house. This she put on her Facebook page.
Which is somehow a news source.
For her it is.
Right.
And the embassy actually apologized to the violent mob attacking us and went so far as to chastise those who use free speech to hurt the religious feelings of Muslims. Funny, the current administration has no problem hurting the religious feelings of Catholics. A lot of lies in that one sentence. So this is what's going on. We have our right-wing Christian fundamentalist, Terry Jones, promoting a film that was made by an Israeli-born right-wing Jewish fundamentalist enraging Middle Eastern right-wing Islamic fundamentalists. And as always happens in this destructive conflict, the extreme fundamentalist wings of all these religions are at war with each other, and innocent people are caught in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. It's the far right-wing fringe of every religion that is the source of these destructive conflicts and is keeping life really interesting for the rest of us.
Right. Well, the insofar as what Reince Priebus said, that's actually parroted directly by Romney, who repeated the exact same thing. So this is not just, you know, RNC spokesperson Reince Priebus saying that this mm-hmm. is the would-be Republican president. And interestingly enough, in a time when they are being called out on their inability on a foreign policy level, that their lack of knowledge and lack of ability in these circumstances, and then we have dropped right on our plate an extraordinary example of the delicate nature of American foreign policy and interaction in the world, especially in an area where we have 80,000 odd soldiers still in harm's way, actually fighting in Afghanistan, where we have many service members throughout the Middle East and again, ambassadors and support staff all through those areas. And the delicate nature of dealing with the tensions between our two countries that keep getting ratcheted up around religious areas. Mm-hmm. This was what Romney said. I'm outraged by the attacks on American diplomatic missions in Libya and Egypt, and by the death of an American consulate worker in Benghazi.
There's more than one, by the way.
Yeah, right. It's disgraceful that the Obama administration's first response was not to condemn attacks on our diplomatic missions, but to sympathize with those who waged the attacks. That was actually Romney.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, diplomatic missions is a very strange way of phrasing it. It's more robo-speak from Romney in that regard. Just it seems kind of it's as if he does not know we have embassies.
I want to read you the statement that our embassy actually released yesterday, okay?
Right.
This is from The Atlantic, which has a terrific piece on the entire incident called The Movie So Offensive That Egyptians Just Stormed the U.S. Embassy Over It.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry Jones, the Florida Koran burner, is helping to promote a movie vilifying Egypt's Muslims, and the Egyptian media got a hold of some clips. So that's how it began. Again, Terry Jones didn't make it. All Terry Jones did yesterday was promote it, and he hung President Obama in effigy in a completely unrelated offensive
right.
act on the front lawn of his fake Christian church in Gainesville, Florida. So, you know, he's really innocent.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, the film's called Innocence of Muslims. Now, after this happened, the mm-hmm. embassy released a statement. Both the Coptic Church and the U.S. Embassy to Egypt issued formal condemnations of the film. The U.S. Embassy's statement began, "The Embassy of the United States in Cairo condemns the continuing efforts by misguided individuals to hurt the religious feelings of Muslims." Okay? These are the guys being attacked, the U.S. Embassy. Their walls were scaled, the American flag was burned, and what did they do? They decided to try to increase the peace and chill people out mm-hmm. and have a statement released that would show that America condemns this offensive film. Okay? It's just called smart business. And so it's that statement by the U.S. Embassy condemning the film that has Reince Priebus tweeting, "Obama sympathizes with attackers
yeah.
in Egypt, sad and pathetic." Now, Republicans, this is on y'all. If you want to be lied to, go ahead and put up with it.
Right.
If you don't, it's time to push back against Governor Romney, half Governor Palin, and Reince Priebus. It's sad. It's pathetic. It's deeply dishonest.
Right.
One more time, here's the actual statement from President Obama. "I strongly condemn the outrageous attack on our diplomatic facility in Benghazi. These workers exemplified America's commitment to freedom, justice, and partnership with nations and people around the globe, and stand in stark contrast to those who callously took their lives."
Mm-hmm.
Terry Jones, if you don't remember, of course, is that handlebar mustache Tom of Finland looking guy who looks like he's the granddaddy of gay porn in Florida.
Right.
Not to be confused with the great Terry Jones of Monty Python.
No.
2 years ago, Terry Jones made a lot of headlines when he announced he was going to burn the Koran. Mass public pressure made him back down and say he wouldn't burn it. Of course, there's nothing really Christian at all about condemning Muslims and burning their holy books, but there's nothing really Christian about Terry Jones.
Right.
Now, that was just a stunt for attention, and it worked, but later on, of course, Terry Jones wanted more attention, so he did burn a Koran, and it led to rioting and death in Afghanistan.
Right.
So I know that on the there's a lot of impulse on many folks on the left to come here and blame Terry Jones for this. He didn't make the film. He just promoted it. And it was Egyptian media who got a hold of clips of the film that incited all this. So as despicable a human being as Terry Jones is, folks on the left, be sure today when you go to work, you have your facts straight and you don't get into a fight blaming the wrong guy for this, because Mitt Romney and Reince Priebus and Sarah Palin are already blaming the president.
Right. Well, that's but they have to. Again,
They don't. They could be adults. They could be leaders and they could stand with the president.
Right. What I was going to say is they have to to gain any ground whatsoever. This is an area, again, where actually the biggest criticism against the Romney campaign overall, I guess there's sort of a three-tiered issue with their lack of foreign policy interest is one. Mm-hmm. Just a complete beyond the kind of Bush level
by saying that Russia is our number one geopolitical foe.
Right, exactly. This kind of but that in and of itself,
how could that be dangerous?
Yeah, and absurd is what it is.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is that they have Iran's back in some areas, and that's their problem. The issue is that we have an increasingly ratcheted up, a jingoistic approach to Iran that is coming to a head in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is being pushed in this direction. Violent confrontation with Iran is being pushed from one quarter in a very heavy way.
Yes.
And Romney is riding that train because that's the only area where he can gain any credibility in his mind on a national, insofar as foreign policy.
Indeed. And, and one of the things that the Russians offered to do a couple of years ago was to actually put the reactor for an Iranian nuclear plant on Russian soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be across the border. It would be nuclear power
right.
for the people of Iran, but they wanted to do it there, which actually at the time sounded like a very smart idea to me. But Russia being one of our most important geopolitical allies, Mitt Romney is not content to just offend the British.
Right. Well, the idea is that, because they want to find a way to do this in a way, because they're much more linked to this area of the world than we are. They border with all these countries. They,
mm-hmm.
And it's something they have dealt with for a very long time, this interaction.
Yeah.
To them, it's how we would deal with, in our, area of the world, how we would deal with Panama or Mexico or parts of South America that we have, trade issues with, share bodies of water with, and borders with.
Mm-hmm.
There's this abstraction to how I think the Romney campaign and his, the John Boltons of the world just view it as this kind of separate machine. Like, it's just the Middle East exists and it is not physically connected anywhere.
Yeah.
It is not it is not connected via trade either. Essentially, it is an oil source that needs to be taken. That's it. That's mm-hmm. its sole purpose. Damn the people. Damn the existence of a culture or any of our history or the British history.
And yet, they're plenty fond of the Saudi royal family.
Oh, no question.
And that should be established. There's been a lot of bowing to that family over the years from both sides. And
well, I love the deep bow issue with Obama, and yet we have pictures of Bush holding hands with
yes,
the guy.
Yes, well, we have pictures of, Eisenhower bowing and Nixon bowing. And,
right.
It's like
but
it's
holding
other
hands, it's,
yeah,
I mean, like,
exactly.
From,
Now, again, let me make one thing really, really clear, and I know all y'all out there watching the Steph Show on Current and listening on your radio already know this. The strongest condemnation goes to the people who committed acts of violence and killed these innocents.
Right.
Okay? No doubt. But let's get the whole timeline clear. An offensive, inflammatory film made by a far-right-wing fundamentalist Israeli, promoted by a far-right-wing fundamentalist American Christian, inciting violence among far-right-wing fundamentalist Muslims in
For the record, though, that was he's an Israeli American. He lives in
yeah.
the United States. It was funded by 100
yes.
Jewish donors who it appears to be there. A good portion of them are American.
Yeah.
And it was part of the reason why. And we got to take a break. I think it was
yeah.
Part of the reason why it became an issue was it had been out since July, but they just released a translation in Arabic with Arabic subtitles.
Not altogether coincidental it happened on 9/11.
No,
so we want to know what y'all think. Please do call us at 1-800-STEPH-12. We'll be bringing you more information as we get it here on the show. And we have a terrific show set up for today. Governor Jennifer Granholm joining us, former Congressman Alan Grayson, and many, many more. I'm John Fugelsang, joined by Hal Sparks.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's like a Mensa meeting with fart jokes. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be right back.
mashed up. Neither Michael nor Freddie Mercury knows about that, but it still sounds good. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John.
Although Nielsen. They work together quite a bit.
They do.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the only reason Another One Bites the Dust made it on a Queen album, because the label did not want to include it, was because Michael Jackson went to bat for it. He said it's a hit.
Did not know that.
They didn't want, it was too different from the rest of the album, and the label didn't want to include it.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and they also co-wrote that song that Mick Jagger sang with the Jacksons.
Oh,
Freddie Mercury and Michael Jackson worked on that together.
Yes, that song that no one remembers.
Yes.
And with quite good reason.
But Mick ended up singing it instead of Freddie because of label issues.
Wow.
Yep.
I have been out geeked this
morning. Look at that.
At 6:30 a.m. Pacific Coast time. You're watching the Stephanie Miller Show or listening on your radio. We're very pleased you're with us. John Fugelsang along with Hal Sparks. We are bringing the news to you as soon as we get it about the situation, both in the Middle East and the situation here. We've already had Governor Romney seriously misleading the American people about the president's response to the Egyptian embassy attacks. Using it as an excuse to get a cheap political point. So, you know, we're going to hold Romney's feet to the fire, Reince Priebus and Sarah Palin, for their very dishonest attacks on Obama. At the same time, we're going to also hold Terry Jones's feet to the fire for promoting this film. He did not make it, and liberals got to stop blaming him for it, although he did hang Obama in effigy on the White House lawn yesterday. And, of course, our strongest condemnation goes for
on the lawn of his church.
I'm sorry, on the lawn of his church.
Right.
And our strongest condemnation goes to these people who just launched this senseless, senseless attack. We have to respect free speech, but wow. And the Egyptian media really fanned the flames by running these clips all over TV.
Well, I mean, you know, we were looking at, for example, in this country, post-Bush administration, there were still many, many officials in the government that were working under the Bush administration who still held the same foreign policy ideas of the Bush administration. It's still in place today.
Folks, it works like this. If there is a God and he wants someone dead, he'll smite them himself.
Yeah, he's right.
Okay?
Yeah. He doesn't need your help.
Yeah, and it's really always depressing to see the different unauthorized fan clubs of said God fighting each other and trying to incite us to hate each other. Today is a good day, as yesterday was, to fight hate wherever we can. Mm. Let's take some calls. Eric is calling us from Harlem. Good morning, Eric. How are you? You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, good morning, John. Good morning, Hal. Man,
morning.
I love you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was the one that called after they fronted the president and made him bring out his birth certificate.
Right.
And I'm the official happy black man of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Indeed.
Good morning.
I have mixed feelings this morning, man. I was down at Ground Zero yesterday during the memorial. I was down at Ground Zero 11 years ago doing Bucket Brigade.
We have only about a minute, Eric. I need you to make your point. I'm sorry for the shortness of time.
My point is you guys don't blame that minister. I do. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that somebody needs to be held accountable in this country. They wouldn't have had clips to run if an American Israeli and a right wing pastor hadn't promoted. You know, so
I blame the minister Terry. Thank you, Eric, and I'm sorry we're so short on time. I really thank you for the call. And I'm not blaming, it's not that I'm not blaming Terry Jones. I'm blaming all right-wing religious fundamentalism for this. That's
right.
The destructive element, but it wasn't Terry Jones who made the film, and that's the false meme that's being perpetrated by some of our friends on Twitter. Lots more coming up, including your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show on your radio and current TV. Mm-hmm. Stephanie Miller Show. That mashup's offensive to someone in that party.
It doesn't offend me.
Might be offensive to both parties. I'm not sure.
No, but I can do without it.
Does that devalue Counting Crows more or Tom Jones more, that mashup?
Oh, Tom Jones. is there any value in Counting Crows these days? I mean, bless their hearts. I'm glad they're still touring.
I
but you know what I mean?
I love white guys from Amherst with dreadlocks, so
yeah.
You know, I got no problem with
that. but I mean, insofar as if you want to compare, you know, whatever 79-year-olds with careers...
yes, exactly.
You know, to three hit wonders.
Yeah, Tom Jones had a pretty good album this year.
Yeah, exactly. He's still, and maybe Counting Crows will have a secondary arc to their career. I don't doubt it. I obviously am open to the idea, but you can't compare him to Tom Jones because he's been around long enough. You got to give the...
But the essence of mashup culture is, of course, mixing more recent songs, although that song's 18 years old now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
That song's 18 years old, children.
Yeah. Now, when is somebody going to, you know, mash up a Sinatra song, and I have walked 500 miles and I, you know what I mean? Like... That's kind of the equivalent.
Game on, DJs. You heard Hal say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the that was the that wasn't the Replacements. Who said, was the Replacements?
No,
it was that was the something else.
I don't know. It's the same.
Who sang that happy song
Prince's
from the Johnny
band.
Depp movie. Yeah, there was or the two twins.
It's the Australian guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would walk 500 miles.
Yeah.
Da 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 da.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the one was cute and the other one wasn't.
No.
And they were identical. it's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, joined by Hal Sparks. And who's this calling on line 11? It's our old friend, the Rude Pundit. Lee, good morning.
Good morning, and John and Hal.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
This is like the best threesome ever.
Yeah, you get it's the try anything fecta.
You know, Lee, I was excited to have you on this morning to hear your rude punditry about Governor Romney's campaign, and then suddenly the news became all about Egypt and Libya, and then suddenly it became about Governor Romney's campaign again by the way he's falsely trying to mislead the American people and blame Barack Obama.
Right, yeah. Let's blame the guy that sends drones to constantly kill Islamic terrorists.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just read you the statement again, what Governor Romney said. It's disgraceful that the Obama administration's first response was not to condemn attacks on our diplomatic missions, but to sympathize with those who waged the attacks. And as we pointed out already, that is a lie.
That's actually the opposite of what was actually said.
What actually happened was the U.S. Embassy released a statement after the Egyptians, without hurting anyone, saw the footage of this, burned our flag, and then the embassy released a statement saying that they condemn the continuing efforts by misguided individuals to hurt the religious feelings of Muslims, trying to defuse the situation so our Arabic friends wouldn't be too riled up over this. And from here, you've got Governor Romney and Sarah Palin, Rood, saying that Obama was talking about apologizing to the terrorists.
And didn't Hillary Clinton then, 10 p.m. last night, actually condemn the attack?
Yes, sharply.
Like a little more of an administration position than a scared embassy employee.
Perfectly phrased.
Yeah, just look back off. All right, we're cool. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and then Obama's statement this morning was, "I strongly condemn the outrageous attack on our diplomatic facility in Benghazi." It was the first words out of his mouth. So it's a flip flop of what they actually say. You know, I'm beginning to think that Romney actually has a prism he sees stuff through that makes everything backwards.
So he thinks
he's agreeing with himself. He thinks other people are saying the opposite of what they're saying. It's this.
They're in the bubble.
Yeah.
You're reading out of a hat. What else are you going to get?
Mm-hmm.
Right. The other thing is that the Libyan prime minister has actually apologized for the attack.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is just coming over. Libyan prime minister has apologized.
You know what that means, Rude? That means right now the right-wing fundamentalist Muslims in Libya are blaming that prime minister for apologizing and hating him.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm. But at least he's going to draw fire for a while. And, you know, but, you know, that's also going to really, really screw up the narrative for the right in America, because all of a sudden now we have the Libyan prime minister say we don't have to make jokes about resurrecting zombie Gaddafi,
right?
To apologize
on their behalf, or
right.
Release another former bomber, some nonsense.
Exactly. And I think Lee would be naive to assume the GOP will not try to use the overthrow of Gaddafi to slam the president today. As if to say that if our ally for a year and a half, Gaddafi, was still alive and in power, none of this would be happening.
Right.
Totally. You know, or also try to portray the Libyan people as ingrates for, you know, the U.S. Helping to liberate them from Gaddafi.
Which they all completely opposed. Even though Gaddafi was a terrorist who killed Americans.
Exactly. Like the Iraqi people were not grateful to us. You know?
That's really
what it's all about. We really need to get our flowers and chocolates thrown at us.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for my thank you card from the Iraqis that I was promised by Dick Cheney.
I'm sure you can find it amid the rubble in Baghdad.
Yeah, maybe if we hadn't blown up all the post offices.
Now, Lee, I'm not saying that it's only folks on the right who do this kind of dishonest finger pointing and try to exploit tragic events for political points. I pointed out earlier in the day that a lot of folks on the left are blaming Pastor Terry Jones for this film. When in reality, all Terry Jones did was promote it on his website and, you know, hang Obama in effigy yesterday. He didn't actually produce the film. But I don't know. I don't really know if you can even say it comes close. I don't see a lot of people exploiting this, trying to use it to, you know, blame Mitt Romney.
Well, you know, first of all, even if it's appalling speech, you have to respect the right of somebody to, you know, to freely express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's exactly what you said before, you know, let's blame the right wing of the far right of every religion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe in some way that your invisible sky wizard has been offended, then there's something wrong with you. And,
yes, well, really, God can't be offended by us.
Yeah, right. And that goes for if you feel like you need to shoot a doctor who performs abortions, or
mm-hmm, exactly.
If you feel like you need to keep a war going for decades and decades because you think your God owns a city as opposed to somebody else's God.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Just on and on. And it doesn't belong solely to Muslim extremists. It belongs to extremism across the board. And that's what needs to be condemned. But the other side of that is, and the thing that does need to get talked about, is what breeds extremism in every religion, which is usually poverty, ignorance, mm-hmm. the usual thing.
Exactly right.
And resource-based economic forces. When you have a situation where the entire economy of a region or an area is based on a limited resource that very few sit on, in this case oil, in other areas, shale oil, these kind of things, whatever. The control of that resource will dictate the political and economic and ultimately cultural aspects of that area, unfortunately, until such time as that resource is depleted, and then it's a free-for-all again. And
yeah,
that's
right.
Ultimately what's happening in the Middle East is this, is we are reaching that point. This is a natural part of the arc of peak oil that we're actually getting into. As it gets tighter and the need for that resource stretches thinner and thinner.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Osama bin Laden said that was one of the reasons why his speech was censored on C-SPAN without ever defending that murderous tool, he said the oil belongs to all Arabs. You know, mm-hmm. that was his belief. I guess mm-hmm. that was his version of oil, fossil fuel socialism.
Right.
In reality, it's these five families, and I use the bin Laden Ku Klux Klan parallel mm-hmm. all the time. If you, as you so acutely pointed out, Lee, if you have people who are mired in poverty, illiteracy, social injustice, and you bring in a charismatic religious figure to tell mm-hmm. them who to blame use violence, I don't care if it's in the American South 80 mm-hmm. years ago or in the Middle East today, you're going to see violence.
Oh, you know, what about the knee-jerk reaction that's going to happen on the right, that is already happening on the right in America, is merely that kind of ignorance without the availability of rocket launchers.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, that's, again, it's very easy for our religious fanatics to sit back and enjoy the ride to some degree because they have a larger military force doing their killing for them.
Right.
They can actually benefit from the fact, and many, quite frankly, that's sort of the perspective about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, is that the Palestinians are ultimately smuggling rocket launchers, creating homemade bombs and throwing rocks because they have to in their side of how the battle is, because the dominating force already has a military, already has a structure, and the hyper-right wing of that party can use that to further their ends by stoking fear and doing all that. I mean, this is the neocon in our country. This is the neocon methodology.
And let's point out there are Palestinians and Israelis who want to solve our problems nonviolently.
Exactly.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And by the way, the majority.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, it's the minority, the far right-wing fundamentalists of all religions who think that it's okay to use violence to solve problems because God's on my side.
But that's also the group that always needs to be placated, that always needs to be, or that needs to be riled up for your own political gain.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that in the Romney campaign here, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I'll be interested to see what Morsi does in Egypt in his response.
I know, I feel badly. I want to know what you were planning, how you were planning on bashing Mitt Romney before all this happened today.
I know. I mean, you know, he just, you know what, he is, and you guys must know this too. Did you expect this much material from Mitt Romney?
Well, here's the thing. I understand where you're coming from, because it was almost like the glorification of a candidate. They were really shooting for this kind of, we'll just that be so stiff, be so nothing, that nothing will stick.
Did you say agorification?
Agorification. The idea of what their idea about Al Gore was.
Oh, I see.
That he was, you know, like if I pull back my personality.
He's not agoraphobic, I see.
No.
Okay.
If you pull back personality, you're able to act, you know, like deal with, let the other guy's personality be his biggest weapon against him.
Yeah.
In that, here's this countrified, you know, chicken fried idiot that wants to be president. I'll be presidential and kind of, you know, stately.
I see what you mean, yes.
And that was what Romney was going to go for. Then he brings on Paul Ryan, who apparently can't say the truth about anything. So you got one guy with two opinions on everything, and another guy who's makes stuff up, and you know these inflated claims about all things.
Lee,
well,
the thing is, it's like
the death of that image of the naturally competent white man. You know, like we would just look at Romney and go, well, yes, of course, that's the person that should be leading us.
Well, yeah. You know, remember when things were simpler and there was just a couple of white guys running the place, but that's really what they're shooting for.
Right.
I think you're right.
This is maybe we could say this is more, it's less Reagan and more what? Who was the last right winger who attempted to get by just on that kind of look of himself?
There's a whole lot of them on the congressional level.
H.W. Bush was just like, here's a nice soft continuation. Don't pay any attention.
Right.
I don't even have to run on personality or attitude. I'll just be here.
Lee, let me ask you, because you're right about something. You know, a lot of comedians didn't think Mitt Romney would be funny. When Mitt Romney clinched the nomination, it was all comedians and conservatives who were depressed. And I was like, hey, this is who you're stuck with, comedians and conservatives. Make the most of it. But I somehow suspect you, Root Pundit, knew that Mitt Romney would be a fertile source of material.
I knew that he would. I didn't know he would provide us with this much material. I thought there would be constant. We would be constantly able to make, you know, stupid Mormon jokes like I did earlier.
Right.
And those are the easy pot shots. I just didn't think that he would be constantly spouting off these things and being so desperate. I mean, that's what this is. This is like that desperate businessman, whose company is going under, and you see him, his tie is loose, and his perfect hair is all sweated back, and he's just, you know, can't understand why everything that he thought would go perfectly has now just gone downhill.
Because this was supposed to be easy. The idea that he thought his win was supposed to be easy? Even the primaries, after all that bruising primary nonsense, he still thought it would be a cakewalk on some level, like he just deserves it.
Oh,
like
and
he just... A promotion.
The middle class will greet me as a liberator.
Exactly. And, everybody talks about people on the right and people on the left even talk about the bubble, the small group of advisors that Obama exists in, that he's only got these few trusted advisors.
Right.
But think about what Romney has been hearing his entire life. You know, he has been told that he is this great and mighty businessman. He's been told that he is and he's believed his own myth.
The white horse.
Promote it, you know, that he is the one white horse that can prance around. That's right. And that he came in and saved the Olympics.
Which is something he should boast about but can't boast about because it involved earmarks from the federal government.
Right.
Right. And his one term as an elected official, and people forget that when they're talking about his experience. He has 4 years as an elected official of any kind.
And did not run for re-election.
Right.
And is not seriously campaigning in his home state because he is so unpopular.
Right. And also brought on a guy who, you know, from this outsider point of view, I know business and whatever, hires a guy who has no personal business experience, even though he said that's necessary for a presidential candidate. Paul Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
He was basically saying, Romney made the case that Obama is not qualified because he never had any private business experience.
Exactly, and he takes away his own wedge.
And then he takes Paul Ryan, who's been a career politician since straight out of college, worked for Jack Kemp. I mean, he's been in government.
But it's much like the Senator McCain picking Governor Palin as his running mate. If your whole wedge issue you're running on is that this guy, Senator Obama, lacks the experience to be president, you don't pick someone with less experience as your running mate.
But he did vote for two wars.
Yeah.
So that's his qualifications. That's his. He literally said that. That's his foreign policy credentials.
Who? Paul Ryan?
Paul Ryan said that the reason he has foreign policy, his example of his foreign policy credentials is he voted for the Iraq and Afghanistan war.
Yeah, I'd like to also.
They're not running against Senator Obama this time. They're not running against President Obama. And what is Mitt Romney's foreign policy credentials? That he, other than he, you know, has Swiss bank accounts and Cayman Islands.
And he lived in France during the Vietnam War as a deferment, pretending to be a missionary.
And And according to people around him, it was very hard for him because, you know, the French weren't very fond of the Americans at that point.
Well,
so.
No, the problem was that he was going around trying to convert French people in Bordeaux, France, while he was living in a castle.
Right.
He was trying to convince French people living in Bordeaux to convert to Mormonism and give up wine. Bordeaux, not the
castle,
best place.
Right. A Mormon-owned castle, by the way.
With stained glass and a Spanish chef. You know, Lee, we got to go, but I just want to leave you with this thought. Do y'all remember when there was those Danish cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad and George W. Bush said that that was offensive?
Mm-hmm.
Was George W. Bush a sympathizer? Was he
right.
apologizing to the Islamofascists? Or was he being sensitive to diffuse tensions? You know,
right.
it's like Bush is looking more and more like Socrates compared to these guys.
He certainly knew when to hold his fire.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, when your daddy's best friends with that many Saudis, you learn some manners with them.
Exactly.
Lee Papa, Root Pundit, how can people follow you?
Rudepundit.blogspot.com, and I'm on Twitter at @RudePundit.
You know, you're one of my favorite people in all of radio, just such a smart, moral guy. How dare you?
Yes.
Lee Papa, what a pleasure as always. Everybody buy his book. It's great.
Yeah.
The Rude Pundit's Almanac. Thank you so much, Lee.
Great talking to you guys.
We'll be right back with more of the Stephanie Miller Show on your radio and current TV right after this.
Highbrow, lowbrow, unibrow. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm gonna be the man who thinks I'm next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you.
I want more Scottish accents in my top 40 songs.
Great. I can't believe I forgot the word Scottish.
It's the Proclaimers.
The Proclaimers.
This is the Proclaimers. Hal and I are chastened. We didn't remember the name of this band right away. I'm very sorry that we forgot the name of a band that had one hit song in 1991.
Yeah.
It took us a few minutes.
Usually
thank
on
you.
That.
Thank you, Steph Heads on Twitter.
As much
for
VH1 as the two of us have done. We probably lost our VH1 card just then. Don't let us on campus anymore.
I lost my VH1 card a long time ago. The last time I ever VJ'd for VH1, they had this script for me. It was like in 2000. And when they were still showing videos, and I was back in New York, and they said, would you come in and VJ for us again? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I went in, and it was all the copy was about how Ricky Martin loves the ladies.
Oh.
All the scripts they had for me was about how Ricky Martin loves the ladies. And I was like, guys, really? Just read the copy, okay? And I called him Rickety Marketing. And they never invited me back. And
well,
I was
sure.
proven right. Okay, we're going to take your calls at 1-800-STEPH-1-2. It's you know, 9/11th anniversary yesterday, I think. As hard as it might be to find joy and humor in a day like 9/11, I think that on some level we're obliged to, and
yep.
I feel the same way on a day like today. Wayne is calling us from Kansas City. Good morning, Wayne. You have a comment about the president's statement?
Yeah, I was sitting here ready to tell you it was the Proclaimers, and I missed out on that.
Believe me,
everybody on Twitter,
in.
Pal.
It is a beatdown on us on Twitter about this. So, yes.
I'm known as the ancient geek, and I have... Mm-hmm. All kinds of stupid stuff like that. But talking about the president.
Yeah, we've got about a minute, Wayne.
Anybody who's in charge, their first job is to lessen the danger of the situation. So
right.
whether it was Obama or the embassy, the first thing has to be to try to tamp down the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Star Trek, only a fool fights in a burning house.
You have truly outgeeked both Hal and I now. That's you're exactly right.
I'm
yes.
the ancient geek. That's what I do.
You're exactly right.
Spectacular, though.
You've got to stop people getting hurt first.
Yeah. Well, and that's leadership. And Reince Priebus, who comes out and says Obama sympathizes with attackers in Egypt when it was the Egyptian embassy that released that statement in the first place, shows how dishonest they were.
Right.
And you're exactly right, Wayne, and I thank you for the call. We'll be taking more of your calls soon. We're going to be coming up with Jackie Schechner in another current news mm-hmm. update. Again, we have a great, great show for today. Governor Jennifer Granholm will be joining us, as will the Reverend Sandy Richards, to talk about religious extremism, former Congressman Alan Grayson, and special guest Elaine Boozler will be joining us in studio later yep. on this morning.
And we are hump-chatting at HalSparks.com. You can
Please.
Join the chat there. It's just go to HalSparks.com, click on the hump-chat, and join right in.
And I want to point out that Governor Jennifer Granholm's show, The War Room, is now moving to 10 p.m., and Hal and I are doing a show in Madison, Wisconsin, together for the election on October 6th. So
yeah.
lots coming up.
Very exciting.
We'll be taking your calls. This is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Good morning. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week on your radio, your computer, and on Current TV. I'm joined by the great Hal Sparks. As always, Tony Sorrentino on the mic, taking your phone calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. Travis T-Bone will be taking your calls. Our guests for the rest of the show will include Governor Jennifer Granholm, former Congressman Alan Grayson, comedian extraordinaire Elaine Boozler. And right now I want to welcome a very special guest to our show, someone who's been a guest here before, who I'm really glad was able to come in at a pinch in light of these horrific fundamentalist religion-based attacks going on in the world right now, Reverend Sandy Richards, L.A. Zone. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to be here with you, John. And, of course, the great Hal Sparks. It's my Jimmy Carter moment. Ladies, I'm resting in my heart.
Can you bring the mic a little closer to you?
Yep.
There we go.
Like
that? That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh. Thank you.
Good, so they missed my lusting in my heart comment.
Yes, you were lusting in your heart.
Thankfully. You were censored by by the media gods.
One very innocent comment by Jimmy Carter that was misconstrued and haunts him for decades.
Well, yes, but, you know, it doesn't mean I'm doing anything untoward. I'm just appreciating God's
But the
God's
actual
creation.
The actual quote Jesus said was, "If you look on woman, if you look on woman with lustful looks, you've committed adultery in your heart." Which I always interpreted of Jesus saying, "Stop sexually harassing chicks."
Yeah,
you know, I mean, imagine how bad men are right now with the looks they give women in public. Imagine how it was 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Jesus was saying, "Dudes, if some lady's here in the market trying to buy her spelt and you're giving lustful looks," he's talking about ogling.
Yeah,
that's what I always took that passage to mean, and not just you've committed adultery if you have lust in your heart.
So let's look at it. There is a way to look at the religious extremism question in the light of this, how women are treated. And I want to say that I appreciate that Secretary Clinton is taking this kind of more cautious, more measured road, because in 2008 we learned that you are 90% more likely to be killed if you're a woman than a man. Women are more at risk in the world than a soldier in armed combat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of armed combat.
Well, I'm glad you're here with Hal, because I wanted to get a clergy person and my humanist friend.
Yes.
For the same topic. Now I just want to put this out to you guys. I said in the first hour of the show that I think that, you know, when we talk about these problems and these crazy people, we're not talking about your average moderate or liberal or progressive or sane Christian, Jew, or Muslim. We're talking about the far right wing fundamentalists who keep thinking that they can do whatever they want. And I have kind of a formula I've devised to how to know if you or a loved one is a fundamentalist. Five steps, I think, that can guarantee that you're not just an average religious person,
right,
that whatever your religion are, you're a right-wing nutjob. Five traits that, whether you're Hindu, I don't know if they're a fundamentalist Scientologist, but Hindu, Christian, Jew, Muslim. Number one, put down women, as you said, Reverend, that women are to be subordinated. Number two, hate the gays. Okay, the more to the right you are in any religion, the more homophobic you are. Number three, violence is okay if I do it because God's on my side. Justifying violent acts in the name of you because your club's the one right one. Number four, other religions are inferior and are not to be respected. And number five, the sex thing. Just a lot of hang-ups about our naughty bits. And I find that across the board, whatever your religion are, those five traits are something that the fundamentalist wing of every faith have in common.
Well,
atheists don't have this problem.
No, I would say that all five of those traits actually attach in a non-religious sense to a certain economic and social strata that exists inside and outside of that in areas of the world that are going through a developmental process that all human tribes seem to go through. There are certain points where they seem to get stuck in this bad patriarchy that either is attached to, you know, Old Testament Christianity or these structured patriarchal religions seem to have an issue with bad fathering that seems to get extrapolated on the rest of the world. Whatever you believe about God, I believe you believe about your own father.
Either
he is overbearing and controlling, or he is a total lackadaisical, slacker, non-existent guy. But you will believe that about God.
or a cool, loving guy.
Or what I mean is in the extreme.
Yeah.
And if you, and, Or you could also believe the opposite, I have found. You can, if your father was non-existent in your life, you will sometimes attach yourself to the idea of God as a constant, forceful presence. And if your father was a constant, forceful presence, you may seek out a God who is in there. Your externalization of the God force may be that you believe it is a relaxed and more liberal and open-minded person.
Sure. My dad was a Franciscan, so I grew up with a guy who thought God was love, and my attitude was pretty good. Now I think God is a guy who is love who's also off his meds sometimes.
Well, I really have to say that I believe that things are really sort of divided into, let's call it, two camps for the sake of the radio, and say that there is a group of people who think you're sacred because of who you are in terms of your birth. So if you were born wealthy and male, you're probably blessed by God, and therefore we just have to do what you say. And then when the U.S. does this too, maybe we are still developing, Hal, but this has kind of been the U.S. is like, you do what we want, or we force you. Like, this is going to hurt you more, or me, more than it hurts you to spank you and punish you.
Yeah.
But this whole kind of idea that if you disobey us or you don't do what we want, you should be punished. And unfortunately, that goes for anyone who's not in that ilk. Like, if you think about the worshipfulness of George W. Bush, like, people really seem to really have worshipped him. And I think it really was more not what he did. He could almost do whatever he wanted, but who he was. And then our current president, who is perceived as, who they think he is. And I think that is really a dividing line between a more fundamentalist, let's call it, like, I will do as I'm told because you are this sacred ambassador from God, versus a more kind of, I am free to make mistakes. I'm sacred because of that, you know, God made me, and I'm here on the earth, and I have dignity, and I deserve respect just something as a matter of being created. Right. So what I do is a little bit less important than the fact that I'm
all that
sacred
Jesus
being.
Social justice talk you
right.
mean. Yes, that
well,
human
there's
uplift.
A lot of it in the so-called Old Testament as well. There's a lot of it in Hinduism and Buddhism. But, you know, it might surprise people to learn that there are fundamentalist Hindus who, you know, blew up a Muslim mosque and tore it down brick by brick, a 500-year-old that was maybe 20 years ago. It was called Ayodhya, and it was a political Hindu. It was like a party thing.
Mm-hmm. That was Gandhi's whole struggle. The final years of his life was to keep the fundamentalists of his own faith from trying to kill the fundamentalists of the Muslim faith.
Right, and also that there are fundamentalist sects of Buddhism, and that there are Buddhist nuns who had a really hard time in the traditional Buddhism because it's overwrought by cultural patriarchy.
Right.
It's
that's
not
exactly
the religion
it.
Itself.
No,
I never
it's
heard
a
fundamentalist
structure.
Buddhist beating the crap out of a gay guy, though.
This is
say.
The problem
it's
is
the women, John, who don't fare well.
In Buddhism,
I don't know
too,
about
huh?
the gay guys, but the women. I mean,
Buddhism in itself is not a religion. It is a system of moral and mental hygiene, arguably. It is a way of cleansing the spirit, as there is no singular deity.
That's true.
And that lack of a hierarchy opens up for a lot more soft interpretation in the world than hierarchical pyramid-based.
In classic Buddhism, that's true.
Yes.
But as Buddhism, as it's practiced, much like every other religion, has taken on different cultural
No question, but it doesn't
it's a
over.
It's a complicated world. You're right.
True, but it does not overlay.
Buddhism.
There's no waggy book. Well, there's no singular point where I can point in the I Ching or in any of the works of the great Buddhist teachers that says unequivocally here it says this and I can use that as a dictate.
Right.
That's the one thing that separates Buddhism, I think, from the world's quote unquote. Because I don't believe it's a religion. I believe it's a philosophy, because religion actually comes from the word religio, to bind
together.
I want to say one thing too. When I'm talking about fundamentalists, I'm not talking about the nice conservative Christians that we all know and love.
I don't necessarily like how conservative
Christians vote, but I'm talking about the far right-wing extreme conservative fundamentalists.
Well, I don't even believe that those people use that. It is a methodology for a political or social aim. It is not actually a belief in that religion. There are some floaty cuckoo head people who take a religious thought of any sort and can go off the chain on it and start their own compound and say God has decided, I read this one Bible verse that gives me the right to have child brides. There are those people who will always exist in every society, because the mental health statistics of any society is about 12%. So you'll have, you know, in that 12%, 6% will be either dangerous or edgy in their expression.
It's interesting that you brought up the child bride thing, because one of the points of this film, I'm not going to say the name of it again, was that it depicts the Muslim prophet Muhammad as a womanizer, pedophile, and fraud. This is a common thing we hear.
And homosexual. So that's the fun part, it's a catch-all for everything that could upset people.
But you mentioned the child bride business, and
right.
That's a common epithet that we hear hurled at Muslims, that Muhammad was a child molester. And this comes from the fact that he was, at one point, one of his wives was a 9-year-old. Now, we know historically that this is how things were done. Women were property in the time of Jesus and afterwards, and that many times in treaties and trades, you were given a woman. And likewise, they had very different standards. The Virgin Mary, back me up on this, Rev. Most theologians believe she was 12 to 14 years old.
They think
correct?
She was a young woman. Let's talk about that, because this is my big issue: is maternal mortality.
Mm-hmm.
The modern era of healthcare. And by the way, if you don't get health care, it's still a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Women die in childbirth. And so, you know,
right.
They say 100 years ago the average marriage lasted like 11 years, and that's because women died. Now we live long enough to actually get divorced, which is like a whole,
yeah.
You know, we live long enough. We live past our 50s now, which is really something rare in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they did marry. As soon as you had Jews, Muslims, everybody had that similar code. As soon as you had some pubic hair, can I say that on the radio?
You too late, Reverend.
And as soon as girls began to menstruate, they married. And that's still true in many parts of the world.
Right.
And so here's my little thing. Here's how we end child marriage. Schools for girls. As soon as we start educating them, thank you, little angel got its wings. Every time we educate a girl, an angel gets its wings. And that is just a natural end. We don't have to attack people as being pervy. We can just say, look, we're going to give your girls school. And so those girls go to school and they grow up and they make other choices. They're empowered. They figure out how to make livings for themselves and how to take care of themselves and their children better. It's just better, better, better.
And so, I agree with you on this, but here's the argument you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we in first world America to go imposing our standards on other nations?
Well,
other
I'll tell you who we are. Mm-hmm. 9-year-olds still really can't have babies. 12-year-olds really can't have babies. The women themselves are saying to us, I was just in the Philippines a few weeks ago, and we happened to go to this beautiful place called Talaingod. It's in Davao del Norte, which is in the south of the Philippines, in Mindanao. And those native women there, the indigenous people there, the women, we met with them. And we said, well, what do you want? And they said, we want our girls to have schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, we'd like some birth control. Because
right.
They're pregnant twice a year. I mean, think about it. That's how it used to be before the pill. Women were just pregnant all the time.
Yep.
And if they lived, great. But a lot of times they didn't.
Well, that became that social structure became codified in the religious doctrines of most areas, because we will often reflect what we wish would happen or justification for our own actions into the governmental structure or a tribal structure or religious structure of our community in a smaller sense.
Which is
so as we come up, we go, all the women are dying, so on the one hand, they must deserve it on some, you know, I'll put it in my book that they deserve it. On the other hand, I will also go that there's nothing really we can do about it because it's in somebody else's hands. And then the other thing is that I have actually reason. I'm the one surviving, so I must be special.
Roman Koch Party USA tweets, GOP also blames Obama for sympathizing with the zombies in Michael Jackson's Thriller video.
Right.
So let's not forget what really counts out there, people. We're going to go to break right now.
Yep.
We'll be right back with more with the Great House Sparks and Reverend Sandy Richards right after this.
Yeah.
You can't turn her off. Not in the middle of turning her on. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Why are you smiling? Why are you smiling, Tony?
I'm just trying to figure someone out. I don't know who this is yet.
Is this another mashup? Oh, this is Bob Marley. And this is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Right.
It's back to the mashups. We played all the peace songs yesterday. We should probably play more peace songs today in light of what's going
considering.
On. However, I'm John Fugelsang filling in for Governor Miller while she's off taking a very well-deserved vacation, joined by the brilliant Hal Sparks, my tourmate friend and mentor.
Yes, indeed.
And joined by the brilliant, lovely Reverend Sandy Richards, LA's own.
Hi,
thank
Sandy.
You.
Pleasure to be here.
Sandy. Thanks for
presenting for the progressive Christians.
Well, and they're out there, you know, and it's like that. Those are my heroes too. You know, like I feel like all we see on the news about Christians are creeps screaming at women outside clinics, and guys like Terry Jones, who, again, the pastor who burns Korans, incites violence, and hung the president in effigy outside his church yesterday morning. Hanging a black man in effigy in Florida. Tasteful for a church. Wouldn't you all agree?
I just want to know, what do I have to do to get on the news? Like, you know, like, I'm not willing to do that. Do I run around naked? Like, what do I do? Like, the progressives just aren't that interesting.
You would get on the, if you ran around naked, you would get on the news. Erica Badu did it at Dealey Plaza, and she got on the news. You could do that.
I would say that you're both getting a better picture of what it must be like to be a moderate Muslim in the world.
Can
you imagine being Muslim in the world and the only video of you that they ever show of your mm-hmm. religion is people burning and tearing flags?
My cousin's Egyptian. My cousin, Debbie in Jersey, married my cousin Magdi, and he's Egyptian, and I grew up having a Muslim cousin who's mm-hmm. a doctor, who's a great guy. So I never grew up really with an in to hate Muslims. I grew up knowing them, and I have friends. Right. Harris Safar is a good friend of this show. I have him on all the time. And it's like we don't see the moderate Muslims on TV, like we so rarely see the liberal Christians on TV.
And I know so many. I even know liberal Muslims. Come on. Like, I know so many amazing Muslim leaders who I work with. You know, we work in L.A. We work interfaith a lot because that's how you get justice.
You work with atheists?
Yeah.
Do you?
And there's actually a group of humanistic Jews who show up, and we actually have, are you ready for this? A pagan contingent that shows up, like a Wiccan contingent.
Well, so you have Wiccans and Christians and atheist Jews all working together for peace in downtown L.A.
Right. Well, it's not just downtown L.A., it's across L.A., but yes, absolutely, we do. And it's a really wonderful thing when all those people show up in City Hall, attention is paid. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to be able to speak to justice and make an effective difference mm-hmm. by showing
you
up.
You community organizers.
I know, it's great. And the community really organizes us. That's what you learn about religious leaders, is that for us, for the progressives, we really are doing as our people have demanded us to do. So that's a good mm-hmm. feeling.
I got a thing I wanted to, I mentioned this to Hal during the break, Mr. Sparks. Now, we're hearing Mitt Romney just gave a statement where he used the word apologize for the president several times.
Yeah.
One of Mitt Romney's biggest lies, and it's a lie he repeats again and again, is that Barack Obama went around the world apologizing for America. This is a lie. Go look on PolitiFact. They'll show you it's a lie. A lot of Americans have had to go around the world apologizing for Bush. That's another matter. He's saying again how the government was apologizing to the Muslims. That is not the truth. Now, what happened was, I'm going to repeat this again. We said it in the first hour. The embassy, the American embassy in Egypt put out a statement saying the embassy of the U.S. in Cairo condemns the continuing efforts by misguided individuals to hurt the religious feelings of Muslims, referring to this film that the Egyptian media ran clips of that incited the violence yesterday. So Mitt Romney is saying, and now at 10 o'clock last night, Politico reported that the Obama administration, it's just so incredible, the lie. The Obama administration disavowed the statement from their own embassy in Cairo to apologize. And again, it's not an apology. It's condemning the continuing efforts by misguided individuals to hurt the religious feelings of Muslims. Because of this, you have Reince Priebus saying Obama's apologizing to terrorists.
Right. P.S. The addendum to that statement was, as we condemn efforts to offend believers of all religions. Mm-hmm. And this goes to Secretary Clinton's point when she made her statement, which is a very human point about the cost of people that her State Department interacts with regularly, especially considering what we just went through in Libya.
Exactly. Sandy, tell me where people can follow you and tell the folks how they can follow your good work.
I have sandyrichards.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at Sandy Richards. It's with an I-E.
Okay.
At Sandy Richards, I-E, not a Y. But, I am so proud of Secretary Clinton, and I want to talk about also Susan Rice, who is our UN ambassador. And both of these women are doing all they can to keep the world safer for women. Because believe me, if Mitt Romney's end game is he wants to get elected president and then go to war against what, Libya or Egypt? Mm-hmm. Or what does he want to do?
Oh, somewhere else, Sandy.
With what army? Because, you know, I, as a pastor, there are Methodist soldiers who can't even return to church because what they have seen and what they've been through, they think it distances them from the rest of us.
You're exactly
and it
right.
has. They're so traumatized, and it's just heartbreaking.
Thank you, Sandy. We'll be right back with lots more on The Stephanie Miller Show. This is The Stephanie Miller Show. You are listening to, believe it or not, Eric Clapton and Wynton Marsalis from the Play the Blues live album at Lincoln Center. And this album is like you walked into a Harlem speakeasy in the 20s. It's incredible.
Wow.
Taj Mahal appears on it as well. And here's Clapton singing now with Wynton Marsalis. Dynamite stuff. Because I'm just, it's so depressing, I got to play happy music. I'm John Fugelsang. You're watching The Stephanie Miller Show, joined by the great and brilliant Hal Sparks. And sticking with us for a little longer is the Reverend Sandy Richards. Thank you for hanging out.
Great to be here.
I do appreciate it. Go ahead, Hal.
It should come as no surprise that this is the first press conference I think Mitt Romney has done where he's actually taken questions in the, you know, I can't remember when the last one was.
I don't remember one.
Yeah.
And this is a very calculated move to burnish his foreign policy.
Exactly, because he has none. Yeah. And so to appear as though, as if it takes any thought, any kind of legitimacy as far as, you know, that gives you any foreign policy credentials to stand in front of a group of people and go, I strongly condemn any attacks on the thing, and we will stand as America on principles that blah, blah, blah. Like this word salad, you know, semi-Palin response that he's been giving to these kind of things while using it as an opportunity, while the relatives of the dead are still being informed to as a political, mm-hmm. as a ham-handed political attack on the president in an attempt to burnish his own credentials. Now,
and that's the difference between a politician and a leader.
Right.
I want to point out that Secretary Clinton pointed out that it was Muslims who helped carry the ambassador's body to the hospital.
Right.
It was Muslims who helped protect other Americans. And no one's accusing her of capitulation or apology.
No.
It's also worth pointing out that, again, the Obama administration last night did say the statement by Embassy Cairo was not cleared by Washington and does not reflect the views of the U.S. government. So
right.
even though the Cairo embassy didn't apologize, just said that they condemned the efforts to hurt the feelings of Muslims, that's now being said by Reince Priebus, literally, that Obama is sympathizing with the attack.
Right, and sympathizing is a huge word. Again, that's burnishing that concept of foreign, that's burnishing that idea that he's a secret Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
This is a meme that they're pushing. Now, the reason this is Romney's methodology is because he's not genuinely a politician. He's not genuinely a leader. He's in the regard of he cares about a citizen.
But he's only not a politician because so many people have chosen to vote against him when he's run.
Right, that's true.
Technically,
he's not a politician because he couldn't get elected in his state again. But in reality, what he is a leverage buyout guy. And what he does is, you know, from a corporate standpoint, was he found he'd find companies that were in trouble. By controlling interest in them through using other people's money, saddle them with debt, bankrupt them, and sell off the parts.
Mm-hmm.
If they were not absolutely, you know, in the case of Staples, for example, a sound business thing. I think they had three successes ultimately that were of any major note. The rest of them were literally meant to be they made more money from the buying out and the destruction of these companies. Now, keep in mind, this is how he views the world. This is how, if you want to break down Mitt Romney's methodology, is dissection and using other people's money to solve something.
Yeah.
And if it can't be solved, then profit quickly from that solution.
Yes.
Decimate it.
And being a corporate buyout specialist doesn't necessarily mean you understand anything about making a national economy
right.
work.
No.
Now, Reverend, I know you're...
Especially for everyone.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole point. That's the difference between a political leader and a business leader.
Yeah. Well, and I don't even think the word leader is applicable here. Reverend, I don't want to ask you about Mormonism per se, but I want to know, for you as a progressive clergy member, what is your take on Governor Romney?
Well, you know, I continually find that I have a whole perspective of points of view that I'm not sure he's ever even heard of. I find that he seems very kind of almost naive in a way about the way the world works. Like he kind of seems to think that the way to solve problems is we go in with our army and we say, now, no, 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 don't you make
right.
me spank you, and I must punish them if they misbehave. Well, you know,
he's very vague when he talks about how he deployed military force.
It doesn't make sense. And what I do know is if you want to beat the drums to war, when we go to war, 90% of the casualties are going to be civilians. And then the women and children who don't die, those women are going to be raped, they're going to starve, they're mm-hmm. going to be traumatized because they have to run
right.
from the military. And let me just, I'm going to go a little further with this. What happens when the military comes to town? You have a bunch of hungry young men So I'm not just talking about sexual appetites.
I'm
talking
military
about
we talking
they need
about?
To who, feed the
who's,
group.
Who's military?
Any military.
What do you mean by hungry young men?
They're going to eat all the food.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to kill the chickens. They're going to eat the crops. They're going to, I mean, that's
well,
what happens.
In
so,
fairness, the U.S. military does have their own rations.
They
they're
come
not
with their own
the
rations, but
do,
don't you think that if they could, I mean, I'm not saying the U.S. military is necessarily doing war crimes, you know, as other military are, but plenty of other military who are funded by us are. So, I mean, it's a
good
problem
point.
Worldwide. We're asking for war crimes against women. We're asking for war crimes against children. We're asking for war crimes against men who are non-combatants.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, if you look at the casualties of the U.S., how many men and women died in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, multiply that by 90% and see how many people have died.
Yeah.
And ask yourself, just because they're Muslim, just because their skin is brown, just because their neighbor or a small minority of them have taken on this kind of violent act of attacking an embassy. That's not everybody. That's a few people. And if you want to use that as a Band-Aid excuse over your willingness to go to war, then you don't understand what war is.
Let me bring up one thing, and in fairness to Governor Romney, he hasn't advocated invading or occupying any countries. He's talking about strategic airstrikes on Iran, which we don't want to see happen.
Strategic
but,
airstrikes, who's that going to hurt? 90%
well,
women
yeah,
and children.
Hurt civilians.
That's my point.
It is. But,
yeah.
But now let me bring up President Obama. A lot of progressives don't like drone strikes, and we don't like the fact that so many civilians have been killed by the drone strikes. However, taking a step back, it appears the reality of the situation where we are in history is that this is the dawn of a new military age, where we are shifting from sending armies in and having robots go and bomb people. Whether we like it or not, it's how it's going to be.
We have also moved. If you watch the arc of war in just humanity's face, that it, as countries become first world countries, and as we do deal with conflict in the world, and we do this, we have moved from giant marching armies that wipe out and decimate areas, as you say, that have been happening through the centuries, to nuclear bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, to carpet bombing and napalm in Vietnam, Korea, to shock and awe, which is single city over attacks while leaving the areas surrounding fairly untouched in that regard. That was the thing, is frighten your opponent into smaller and smaller into these surgical bombs, now drone strikes. We are limiting over time our footprint in war. That is a natural arc that I think almost any country in a control position will eventually get to, because it does not serve. The reason why we have drone strikes, the reason why, while the Bush administration would not show coffins of returning soldiers, the Obama administration just doesn't want the coffins
yeah.
in the first place.
Yeah.
And no one mourns the death of a shot down drone. And sending troops into an area that you know can be solved via one of these, especially in dealing with you know the type of insurgency or the type of foe that we're dealing with in this situation, there is no military leader who's going to go, okay, I have an option. I've got a guy I know is planning or is attacking our troops from this area. I need to take him out. This is a war act I'm talking about. There is no commander in the field who would go, I've got 18 guys here in a troop I can send in, you know, in a group, or I can send a drone.
Mm-hmm.
There is no military leader who will not send the drone.
Yeah.
There is no military leader who will not advise their superiors that a drone strike is necessary. We used to call in air support. This is now the modern version of that.
Well,
but and that's the difference. Now, the upside of it, if there is one, is that you don't have troops that need to pilfer resources.
But you do yeah. have to. I mean, I think that we're acting like just what we have now is this like clean strike drone.
Not at
army.
All. I'm saying that we've that this is the arc of war, and if it is to be fought, this is where we're going to continue. By the way, it's going to get smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Let me address that arc of war, Hal,
yeah.
because what's happening. Because
I want to get back to bad-mouthing Mitt Romney, but go ahead. Romney.
Yeah, I know you do, but unfortunately, this goes to not just Mitt Romney, but any elected president that we've had. Unfortunately, the U.S. military might is used to quell what are called insurgencies, but what really are, say, indigenous people trying to protect their lands from
sure.
mining. And they take up arms to protect their ancestral lands happening in Honduras, Guatemala, the Philippines, Africa. Everybody's seen the Brazilian protests by the indigenous people down there to stop their a dam from being built. You know, it's our money, the U.S. money that's going, and drone attacks are being reported now in the Philippines against so-called insurgents who are really just standing up for their ancestral land.
Sure.
They don't want the, there's like, you know, billions of dollars worth of gold, sweet crude, and so forth. And you know, and by the way, just simple things like Dole would like to plant more bananas. M&M Mars wants to plant more cacao.
Right.
And so people stand up and try to defend their lands, and they're called insurgents. And then here come the drone attacks. We're hearing reports. They're unconfirmed, but we're hearing reports of drone attacks. But we're also, is definitely the case that the United States is supporting the war, the so-called war against drugs in South and Central America, which is where our military dollars are going down there. And it's not doing anything to stop the drug trade. In fact, it's just harming women and children. It's become militarized.
Well, that's, yeah, the failure of the drug war, I agree, is a totally, that's
I'm
a totally,
saying,
I would
like,
say
I'm
that's
not
a totally...
such a fan of the, like, let's just use drones. Like,
I
know you're not saying
not
that, but I'm
fan
saying
either.
It's not clean either.
Well, I want to bring it back to, I
sorry,
love
Donna,
it. You guys are, I love surrounding myself with people who are way smarter than me. And I think we have to go to break soon, do we not?
Okay.
We're getting
yes,
close
right
on
now.
That anyway.
So I would say Mitt Romney needs a little more education about this situation, and he needs a few more women in his ear about what's really the case.
Yes. Indeed.
About what's happening to women and women's bodies and women's minds.
Unfortunately,
and women's children.
I don't think his belief system allows for that. And I don't I don't just mean, and I know we got to go to break, and we'll talk about this when we come back, I don't just mean his religious faith, because I actually don't necessarily believe that he's a full-throttle Mormon in that regard either.
I'm going to ask you about that when we come back, because that's fascinating to me. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. We are going to get to your calls at 1-800- F12. Jennifer Granholm is going to be coming up in the next hour as well. I'm John Fugelsang. We'll be right back.
Ow. I just snarfed oatmeal out my nose. It must be the Stephanie Miller Show.
Not just the Rolling Stones, that's also my ringtone on my phone.
Wow.
She's a Rainbow, coolest ringtone you can possibly have, trust me on that. Next to that Uncle song from the South Park movie. Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie's on her vacation. I'm John Fugelsang, joined by one of my heroes, the great Hal Sparks.
Before the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, kind of the, I guess, the vision of America that Romney says that he has. And one of the, you know, one of the things that's been floated about why he won't release his taxes is because as a bishop in the Mormon church, he has to give 10%. I think all Mormons have to give 10% of their income.
Their tithing.
Yeah,
it's
in
a
tithing.
Fascinating theory.
And they have to have it. They have to give it.
So theoretically, the Mormon church would know how much Mitt Romney made because they got 10% of all the money he made,
well,
right?
That they're only given based on it's an honor system to some degree. They don't actually check. But if it ever came up and they were questioning you, you can actually be kicked out of the church for it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interesting theories, and one of my favorites is that he undertithed, and that's why he's so determined to keep it secret. Another fascinating theory that even makes even more sense is he doesn't want the world to know that he's doing better now than he was 4 years ago under President
absolutely.
Obama.
Well, it's amazing how many people who are doing better. This is the two... The bifrenic moment for the GOP.
The what, Hal?
The bifrenic, well, the schism in the brain, the where your brain splits into two halves. On the bicameral mind, actually, the lobes just cut them right in the middle, and there are two operating factors in your head.
I thought I was bicameral, but I was just confused.
No, yes, right. It's actually, that's when the human brain started believing in God as an exterior force, when you had your own ideas, but you heard them as a voice. So in the brain,
I blame Descartes for that, by the way.
Yes, exactly. So anyways, the point being is that there are these two running thoughts in the Paul Ryanization of the Republican Party that fascinate me. One is that if you don't have a job 4 years after the worst downturn in the American, and you're on food stamps and all that stuff, it's the president's fault.
Yes.
it is the president's fault. On the other hand, if I don't want your vote, you're a loser who won't get a job. These are they have two thoughts in their heads about the unemployed. And the president just suggested again this idea that that you'd get a tax break For hiring the long-term unemployed.
Yeah, it's essentially when we see the Republicans blaming this president for the poor while simultaneously telling their base the poor are lazy.
Right. And you can't have it both ways. You can't say it's that you're not a self-starter. That's why you're on food stamps. P.S. It's not your fault. It's the president's fault because he's failed to lead on these ideas. Even though, again, the economy is double. Businesses are sitting on $3 trillion of wealth, and that was at last count. That was last year we're talking about that number. It's certainly larger now.
So are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Now, obviously, there are people who've lost their jobs because of the economic downturn, and it may have happened during Obama's administration, but when you look at Wall Street, look at the Dow, look at the fact that despite
the high unemployment numbers,
we are no longer losing 800,000 jobs
a month,
which is what we were losing in January of 2009.
Anybody who goes, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, then just ask them honestly, flatly, would you go back to the economy of January 1st, 2009,
mm-hmm.
before the president took office, as it stood?
Nice
and
argument.
With the trajectory it was clearly on.
Exactly. And that's where I give credit to the stimulus, to the Recovery Act, because
right.
that was the tourniquet. It didn't solve everything. I'm with Paul Krugman on this. I would have liked to have seen it be a much, much higher stimulus.
I'd like to see a second one.
Paul Ryan voted for it more than once under Bush.
Look, this goes back to the similar argument with the why there's no quote-unquote public option in the health care bill. There was no potential for a bigger stimulus. It wasn't going to happen. You had Democrats that didn't have the spine to do it. The Obama administration pushed through as much as they could.
It would have helped America, but it was a political loser for Obama at the time.
Well, it was a political loser for all the Democrats that wouldn't support it. I mean, we have three branches of government. The media seems to forget the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Except when they, you know, are giving speeches about how it's not their fault. The only time you ever see Congress actually involved in the conversation about where our economy is in any measurable way in the media is when they're giving a press conference about what the White House isn't doing.
Yes.
And on both sides, the Republican and Democrat, the only time you will see them is when things aren't happening because somebody else isn't doing their job. This is the conversation that always comes out of the House.
So let me ask you a question. Let's just say in a world, and I know we don't have a lot of time, let's just say you're advising Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
What piece of advice do you give him? You're Eric Fernstrom, Hal. I'm making you Eric Fernstrom.
Okay.
And you have to live with the Etch-a-Sketch shame the rest of your professional life. What do you say to the governor? Do you think he's being well advised today to try and have this fake foreign policy glow and blame the president for a statement the embassy released?
I think the people surrounding him are saying you have to say something and this is your chance.
Yeah.
And he's making up what he's saying off the cuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think the vast majority of what he's saying is just a bunch of word salad he's putting together. I think if I was to roll in and Dermot, is it Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney? I always get them mixed up. Dylan, who was in the campaign as the, if I was to advise him, I'd say, here's your script, stick to it.
Yeah.
And we've got, here's your, I'm going to bring out your foreign policy advisor that has the strongest credentials of the kind of, I'm going to bring out your financial advisor that you also side with, that's very popular, okay. has great plans, that has been bipartisan and respected. I'm going to bring out and they're going to speak as your main surrogates, and you're going to be seen standing next to them. You are not allowed to do a press conference or a press event with Pat Robertson standing behind you.
Smart.
You are not allowed to You're not allowed to have John Bolton speak on your behalf.
That's going to happen anyway.
As an advisor.
Yeah. Well, I think Romney would be better off with you advising him, and I'm glad you're not.
He wouldn't be the same candidate, and so he'd be electable.
I got to point out a few things too. A couple of announcements because you got to leave soon.
Yes.
I've begun watching Lab Rats. I'm a fan.
Thank you. It's fantastic.
You're most welcome.
Yes.
I also want to say that Hal and I are doing a show together, an Election Eve special in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Very exciting.
At the Barrymore Theater on October 6th. That's just going to be you and me rocking it.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing the Sexy Liberal Tour with Stephanie Miller at the Paramount Theater in Seattle, Washington, on the 29th of September, the 27th of October, with Aisha Tyler and Stephanie Miller, the four of us, plus some really cool special guests I'll tell you about.
Yeah.
And that's going to be at the Beacon. And then where can people follow you?
At Hal Sparks on Twitter, you can yell at me there. And then, of course, at HalSparks.com. And my Saturday show is on every weekend, 11 to 1 Central Time on WCPT Radio in Chicago. You can watch
terrific show.
The stream on HalSparks.com, and we're going nationwide very soon, which
congratulations.
Is kind of a nice thing. So I'll have more information as we go forward. But it looks like we're about a month away from that launch.
If you're star for Smart Talk on a Saturday, your show is a real oasis.
It's a good time.
And also, Governor Jennifer Granholm joining us the next hour. Her excellent show, The War Room, is moving to 10 p.m. on Current TV.
Tell her I think she's beyond awesome.
What a speech.
So impressed.
Always a pleasure. And we'll be right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Bye, bye.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, your fearless leader. Steph is on vacation this week. We wish her the best, and I hope she's resting up. I want to thank Hal Sparks. He had to take off. He has an appointment. But coming up in the next hour, we will be joined in studio by Elaine Boozler and on phone with former Congressman Alan Grayson. I'm sorry, former and future Congressman Alan Grayson and the great Governor Jennifer Granholm. We're taking your calls right now at 1-800-STEPH-12. And good night, Miss Agnes. Some of y'all have been on hold for a long time. Beverly, you're calling from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh my goodness, I can't believe it.
Yep, well, welcome. Hope it's worth it.
I was so mad when I first called about Netanyahu's statement that after watching the entire show, now I've got a dozen things to be upset about.
Well, I can give you about 20 seconds to reference the one you're mad about. And I want to point out also that the President and Prime Minister Netanyahu did have an hour-long conversation in the White House last night via phone.
Regardless, he knows that this is a political time and that we don't need a war right now and we don't need his opinion right now. He just needs to sit back, have a cigar and a glass of wine and take it easy because we're always behind Israel.
You're right. Go ahead.
After the show, you keep saying the right wing. You know, that's kind of nice. That's kind of soft.
Okay.
You really need to call the right wing what it is, the fascist wing, because the right wing is not as bad as the fascist wing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, but I do try to avoid saying fascist more than I have to because, you know, they want to call Barack Obama a communist. I try to avoid too many name callings, and I try to go with adjectives over nouns. But I totally get your point, Beverly, and I thank you so much for the call and for your patience online. Also want to point out it was Benito Mussolini who said fascism should be called corporatism because it represents corporate control of government. You don't hear that said by Mitt Romney all that much. Jerry's calling us from New York. Good morning, Jerry. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, hi, John. Just tongue-in-cheek early on in the presentation of the piece, you said, well, it's not, you know, this occurred on 9/11, like it's a coincidence. And I think
no, hardly.
Yeah, no, I know it's not. But the whole point is I would like to see the discussion addressed at the subliminal side of what's actually going on, that basically the American people are set up again, and it reinforces the threat to them.
I'm sorry, wait, subliminal how and set up how?
Set up how? Because basically the human mind processes emotion, and it does it by association. So whether it's real or not doesn't matter because most people process the emotion, the threat.
I don't know what you're saying, but it really upsets me.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that you're talking about the rhetoric of the politicians, but intentional events basically play off the psychological. In other words, if somebody remembers an event, they remember the emotion of it.
Right, of course.
Independently of the thought. The discourse doesn't often matter. It's often the emotion that stays behind.
I think you're giving people like Pastor Terry Jones a little too much credit.
No, I'm not. I'm not giving you. She should be. Well, anyway, that's a whole separate issue there. You know, you're talking about we're emanators of emotion and energy. You either emanate love or you emanate something else.
Right on.
And that's all it is. And we are a direct exponent of a higher consciousness, and we're not emanating that.
So what do you think good progressives need to do? Just keep on emanating love or work harder at emanating love?
No, first of all, you don't turn God into a belief system because it's not experiential. It has to be experiential. And most people are basically reliving their form of disassociation.
Of course, that's what my mom always said.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. In other words, you don't become smug because you wrap yourself in religion. I mean, what was Napoleon said? Armies run on their stomachs. Institutions run on their rituals. And rituals are not emanations.
Jerry, I got to say, I thank you for the call. You're a pretty smart guy, and this is pretty deep subject matter for a show that traffics in fart jokes. I thank you very, very much for the call. While our guest sets up, I'll take one more call. This is from Stephanie in Illinois. Hi, Stephanie. You're on the Stephanie Show. With no Stephanie.
Hey.
Hi.
Look, I've got a theory here, and I don't know if it's a theory, but and it all comes together with how we're being educated in our schools and in our churches. I got two examples. My nephew took AP classes in high school. It cost me $600 because he was smart. He was dumb. It would have been free. But anyway, they let him take in place of his English class, scientific reading, where they read scientific books, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up there and said, he's going to college. What is this guy? Oh, well, you know, and they said, well, we let the kids pick what they want. And I'm like, this is not going to get him through college. So I made him take the regular, you know, English literature classes where he had to get in college. And also, if you go into the churches these days, they don't teach people what they need to know. They teach them what they want to hear to keep the money coming in.
That's a very good point.
While we're being educated at school, I took civics and history class. I knew what the Constitution said. So no one could tell me that the president can give the government our government over to the UN or take God off of money, because I know better, because I was taught better.
Yeah.
These kids aren't taught that in school anymore. And churches are not about souls, you know, saving or anything. It's about money. It's all corporate because it's huge.
I hear you, Stephanie, and I thank you for the call. I wouldn't say that all churches are about that. There's a lot of soul saving that is attempted in churches, but I'll say for my own Catholic faith, the one thing I learned growing up when I was still a good church-going Catholic all the time was it seems that they send the really liberal priests to the liberal communities and the really conservative priests to the conservative communities because that lends itself best to getting nice old ladies opening up their pocketbooks and writing checks on Sunday. I thank you very much for the call. Oh my goodness, who can it be? Who can it be here in the Stephanie Miller studio? None other than comedy legend, the one, the only, the brilliant, the elusive, Elaine Boozler. Is that Bigfoot? I think I see a zipper. Yeah.
I think, yes. I can't believe you woke me up.
I can't believe you were free.
Thank you.
Hal had to leave early, and in a pinch.
I ran into him in the parking lot.
And I heard a rumor that you might be on the West Coast this week.
I am. I am on the West Coast. I was just on the West Coast of Africa, and now I am here.
Practically the same place.
It's exactly the same place.
Well, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
I know what a huge Mitt Romney fan you are.
Yes.
I'm glad you're here, but I have to go to a call because we have our next guest coming, and you're welcome to take part in this interview,
okay,
Ms. Boozler.
I brought things for show and tell because we're on TV now.
I was going to say.
These are the salt and pepper shakers from Kuwait.
Okay.
And,
we have to talk about the military tour.
I was supposed
to go with you. But now on the line is none other than Congressman Alan Grayson. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. What have you done with Stephanie?
I'm not chop liver.
It involved
me tied up in your basement.
Little bit of chloroform got the job done.
Surfing school.
I'm so thrilled you called in, Congressman.
Keep a good girl down. She'll somehow escape.
Well, you are one of the elected officials who's joined the Sexy Liberal Tour on stage twice in two different states. And as was pointed out on this show, you got a standing ovation in your home state of Florida. But damn, sir, you got a standing ovation in Boston when you entered the audience for that show. And
it's great to have you back. It's the show. You know, the show was a two-hour orgasm.
No, it's not you. It's not you. It's what you stand for, and it's the principles you fought for in the Congress and that you're still fighting for are the reasons that audiences all up and down this country applaud you when you walk into a room. And I thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. So I obviously have to ask you how you feel about our president's capitulation to terrorists today and his apologies. The Mitt Romney lie machine got turned up to 11 this morning, it seems, Congressman.
Yeah, no, it's not working, though. I mean, if the election were out today, the president would win, the Democrats would take the House, they'd hold the Senate, the Republicans would accomplish nothing.
And now, how do the Democrats maintain that paradigm for the next 7 weeks to make that happen?
I'll tell the truth and watch Mitt Romney lie, just the way you just described. All the Republicans are doing it now. They just can't help themselves. They can't win any other way.
Well, there's voter suppression. It's not just lying that works. Voter suppression is turning out to be pretty effective for them, too.
Well, we'll see. In Florida, that's very heavy. They're trying to take people who are in their 90s and have them prove their citizenship. We'll see. That works out.
It's outrageous, and it seems like it's backfiring because more and more polls I see show the president really surging in Florida.
Yes, sure. I mean, particularly among older people who realize that the Ryan budget means eliminating guaranteed benefits under Medicare, raising the age of retirement, turning the money in the Social Security Trust Fund over to Wall Street. That's what they want to do. That's what my opponent wants to do. That's not what any rational person wants to do. They're out in the cold when it comes to the actual issues this year, and having Ryan on the ticket just proves it.
Were you impressed by Vice President Biden talking about voucher care?
Yes, and I think all you need to do is just explain to people in some calm, rational manner exactly what they're proposing, and they run away screaming in horror.
Mm-hmm.
It's true up and down the line. You know, in my particular case, my opponent wants to build 100 new nuclear plants because, as he put it, nuclear power is proven safe.
yeah.
He wants to end the teaching of evolution in the schools because, as he put it, that just makes children act like monkeys. You know, on and on like that, right, up and down the line. And Romney's no different from that.
No, he's not. And we've seen that again and time and time again. And one of the most insidious lies they tell or half-truths they scheme, Congressman, is that these changes, Paul Ryan's Medicare plan, will not affect any seniors today. And they're right. It's only going to affect people who are 54 and under when they reach Medicare age. It doesn't go into effect until then. So, yeah, it's going to affect tomorrow's seniors, but today's seniors it won't. And they twist the language to make it seem like it'll never hurt seniors ever.
Well, speaking of someone who's 54, I'm not happy about it.
I don't see why you would be. So tell us how the campaign's going, sir. We're all really, really excited to do whatever we can to get you back. I am working with Rick Overton to set up some fundraisers for you on both coasts to get the comedians who care about the future of the country on your side. How is the campaign going?
It's going pretty well. I mean, what we have is we have strong tailwinds helping us along. The fact is that all around the country, Democrats feel like voting. And that's the best news we could have. In 2010, it just wasn't true. Now it is true. Unfortunately, I think Democrats are being motivated as much by the fear of what they stand to lose if the Republicans take charge than their hope for a better world. And I think that is unfortunate, but that's the way it is right now. I mean, what the Republicans are proposing really is horrifying. But in our campaign, things are going well. Almost 100,000 people have come to our website, congressmanwithguts.com, and made contributions. And that's good because, you know, we are now, I hate to use this metaphor, but we're actually at ground zero when it comes to the presidential campaign and control of the Senate. I'm running in Orlando. I live in Orlando. Florida is very much in play. Both campaigns, both the Obama campaign and the Romney campaign, have run more ads in Florida than anywhere else in the country.
Really?
And the cost of TV ads is now astronomical. In fact, we may actually run out. You may reach the point where sometime between now and November 6th, you won't be able to buy any TV ads in Orlando. That happened actually in 2010 for 2 weeks on one of the stations. Now it may happen across the board. But even though they're now available, they're incredibly expensive, and that's why we need people's help to get the message out. You know, the newspapers do nothing to convey the positions of the candidates in any actual real sense.
I agree.
The TV stations do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Except for Current TV, of course, Congressman.
Current TV, that's right. I make an exception for Current. I make an exception for other networks, which I will not mention because of Current. But there are
no other networks.
None that matter.
The only people that make money on an election are the networks. I mean,
well,
they never want to change.
That's true, and TV stations really love a campaign
they
like
love
this
it.
Because they get to roll
yeah.
around in the dough. But Congressman,
it's unbelievable. I mean, the cost of TV ads in Orlando has tripled in the last 30 days.
Amazing.
So it's really good that people like you are helping out.
Do you think it makes an impact, Congressman, in the age of DVR and TiVo, when so many people, or I should say younger people who are into that technology, just zap their commercials and don't even watch them when they play back? Does that backfire on candidates? It seems like the Obama campaign's been much smarter about using social media than television.
Well, it doesn't backfire yet. I think that the media is definitely becoming more fragmented. You could see that with the conventions. You know, far fewer people watched both conventions this year than they watched in 2008. And over time, people are sort of choosing on their own what they want to be in front of their eyes rather than letting any network decide for them. But right now, because voters are so skewed toward the older audience, and the older audience has less experience with the new media, it's still effective. Nothing else to do. There's no other way to reach people.
Well,
that's
yes,
universal.
You could switch from ads to product placement. Just, you know, get a walk-on and Desperate Housewives or something with a little banner.
Buying congressmen, just not the way you're describing.
Right. Don't think Axelrod hasn't pitched that in the meeting, Elaine Boozler. Congressman, what did you think of the conventions? I had the honor of covering the conventions for Current with Vice President Gore and Governors Granholm and Spitzer.
You were fantastic.
But I've been wondering nonstop what you thought of both of them, because I sure enjoyed watching both. I don't think they were equally effective.
Well, listen, with the Democrats, what you heard over and over again is that the Democrats believe in public service. They're looking for some way to serve people, to solve their problems with unemployment, with health, with education. And the Republicans continue to hope that they can just hypnotize you by saying that you'll be so much better off if nobody helps you and you end up in the gutter. That's the message. I mean,
exactly.
They keep nattering about liberty, freedom, you know, the liberty to die without health care, the freedom to live under a bridge.
The freedom for a 90-year-old with a pre-existing condition to buy the health insurance plan of their choice on the free market.
Didn't you think Bill Clinton's line was fantastic? Basically, here's their position. We screwed it up. He didn't clean it up fast enough. Put us back
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Alan Grayson had an even better line on the floor of the House.
What did he say?
He said their plan is die now.
Ah.
Congressman Grayson.
No, the Republican plan is don't get sick. And the president actually repeated that in his speech.
Don't get
That's
sick.
True.
I was expecting a little credit at that point at the bottom of the screen.
Well, you get a lot of credit here, and I thank you very much for calling into us. It's congressmanwithguts.com. People of Earth, get this man back in the House. What a pleasure, sir. Always a thrill to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too.
And thank
Bye.
You.
Thank you.
And Boozler, it's great to have you here.
I bet you're going to commercial.
We're going to commercial. We'll be right back with the one and only Elaine Boozler right after this.
A beautifully wrapped, glossy, sweet-smelling show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The Stephanie Miller Show. This is the Bee Gees with Pink Floyd. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week. Thrilled to have you here with us. One of the great things about the month of August for me as a new hire at Current TV was I got to do my usual gig on the Elliot Spitzer Show and work on the convention coverage and fill in for Bill Press. But I was unable to go on a 18-day tour of the Middle East to play to military bases that I had previously committed to. Someone who I was supposed to tour with who got to go was Elaine Boozler. Welcome back to America.
Well, thank you. I left 17 pounds in Djibouti. It was about 130 degrees. Every day.
I have been so excited to go to the Middle East with you. And
well, you know, you'll have to go without me next time. I don't think I'm going.
You're
back.
Done, huh? 18 days,
you know,
a little long?
Well, you know, the best part was the troops. I mean, yeah. It was totally surprising in every way. It was nothing that I expected.
I love doing military shows more than, I mean, to military audiences and liberals are the two best audiences in the world.
And it's fascinating because it's not like they're just liberals and they're very young.
No,
it's
you got a lot of conservatives, a lot of libertarians.
A whole other mindset.
But they like political stuff in the military.
But here's what's fascinating. They laughed or didn't laugh, and you could see it was either laughing or not laughing. But when you did politics, they stared ahead. And I finally said, because I talked to everyone when I'm on, what is the deal? And they said, we're not allowed to laugh at politics. And I said, so you're out here fighting for my free speech, so they can't tell me not to say it, so they've told you not to laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yes. And I said, whatever's in your pocket, I get if I make you laugh at politics.
I was in El Salvador, and I was told no political humor. And so I just said on stage, they told me I can't tell any political jokes. And all the troops went, boo!
I know!
We fight for your freedom of speech, man. You say whatever you want to say.
I know.
They're
it's
great.
Fascinating.
I see you brought some Star Wars salt and pepper shakers.
I brought... these are the salt and pepper
shakers. This is great for the radio.
My favorite. Well, show and tell.
I thought that was Darth Vader. That's actually
not
a woman in a burqa.
It's a burqa woman bobblehead, and it was an adulterous stoning night at the stadium, and the first 50,000 attendees got these given away because they ran out of tote bags.
It sounds like Santa's sleigh. Is it just
know,
a porcelain bobblehead?
Yeah, no, it's her going to heaven after they kill her for no reason. And then these are the salt and pepper shakers, the sheikh and his wife.
Can you flip that around for the,
well, the camera?
There's cameras up here.
Over here. Oh,
yes,
here
this
you
is,
go. These are the salt and pepper
You've heard
shakers.
Of TV on the radio. We're radio on the TV.
I see. Well, you can't use the salt unless the pepper is accompanying
it. Again,
there.
I thought that was Darth Vader and a stormtrooper.
It does look like Darth Vader. In person, they don't. They look
that's
like
that's
ghosts.
That's a harlot showing way too much neck and a guy who's hanging out at the Bush compound.
way too much neck. Yes, that's it. And then, of course, the ever-popular Russian burka nesting dolls. But, unfortunately, she's barren. So.
Yeah, how did you buy a Russian burka nesting doll in the Middle East?
Because it was made in China.
I don't understand anything anymore.
And then we have the Sheik with his whole family.
I really wanted to go. The thing is, I have this horrible thing, this condition. It's called a baby, and I wasn't able to go away for 18 days to the Middle East.
Mazel tov and congratulations. And mazel tov is not a word I said in the Middle East.
We were going to be right back. Governor Jennifer Granholm's calling in. We're going to talk to her in just a minute. I'm John Fugelsang with Elaine Boosler. It's the Stephanie Miller Show on your radio, on your computer, and on your current TV. We'll be right back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you live from beautiful Burbank, California, on your radio, on your TV, on Current. And I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph, joined by the wonderful and brilliant and legendary Elaine Boosler.
Hola.
The music you're hearing right now is the new one from Bob Dylan. This is called Duquesne Whistle. It's about to kick in full gear, and this is from his new album, Tempest, released yesterday. And I am thrilled, because it's a great week to be alive. There's, in spite of all the turmoil in our world, there's a new Bob Dylan album, and we have a very special guest. If you were a fan of the Democratic National Convention, then you know that Obama gave a good speech, and Michelle Obama, good speech, Tammy Duckworth, Bill Clinton meant well. There was one speech that mattered last week, ladies and gentlemen of Earth. That was the speech by Governor Jennifer Granholm, who now joins us live on the show. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
I want to start off by saying and repeating to our audience that your exquisite show, The War Room, is now moving to 10 p.m. on Current TV, and I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, it's great. You know what's great about it is that
you don't have to get up early.
Well, yeah, that's true. We have our morning meeting an hour later, which is a good thing. I mean, it's a little bit tougher on folks who are on the East Coast if they like to go to bed early. But for folks on the West Coast, you know, they can get home from work, have dinner, and watch the show at 7.
And that's why we have DVRs anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's such an excellent show. And again, I you're probably sick of it. It's been a week, but I have to gush again and thank you for just the most wonderful, inspiring speech. That even you, your speech was so great. You got the vice president to go off script and give you a shout out during his speech.
That was awesome. Woo! That was totally awesome. But for everybody who's listening, to give credit where credit is due, John Fugelsang gave me a couple of lines in there. So thank you for that.
Wow. Thank you very much for revealing that. Thank you. I was very honored. Well, and as I said to you before, and I said this to you on air last week during Current's excellent coverage, I got to read the speech before, and I wrote to the governor that day and said, this speech is dynamite in a slingshot. It's good. It's great. I was not prepared for your performance, Governor. You were so impassioned and yet so joyful at the same time. I've seldom seen someone of your eminence get a whole crowd going like that. You were like,
you know,
Richard Pryor
funny?
And George Carlin combined.
You know, I've given speeches at Democratic conventions before, and oftentimes I've been slotted, you know, in the spots in the afternoon. Nobody's really paying attention. Certainly nobody on the floor is paying attention. And so you're told by the folks in the back, just continue to talk. Don't worry that no one's going to pay attention. Your audience is really the folks back home. So that's what I was sort of expecting. I thought I would come out and I would speak to the, you know, hoping that, A, first of all, that I wasn't going to get bumped entirely because of time, space, mm-hmm. and everything. But so I just started to go and speak, and all of a sudden I started to get a reaction from the crowd. And when I got to the part of the speech, for those who are listening and didn't get a chance to see it, I was shouting out how many jobs were saved by the auto bailout, not just in Michigan, but across the country. And every time I called out one of those states, those states went crazy. So it sort of was like a wave that I was riding. The audience caused, I think, a lot of enthusiasm in me. So it was a nice feed off of thing. You know, you're a performer. When you got a good audience.
I think she's going to start doing stand-up now. She's hooked.
Oh, no. I mean, you guys, the pros.
The only way you would have gotten bumped was if Robin Williams showed up.
Hey, he was on my plane going there. That's so funny.
Oh, did he stop talking at any time?
No, you know what's funny? I was actually seated next to him.
Oh, no!
I was.
Oh, no. Are you still a virgin?
He bumped me for his son, which makes perfect sense. So I ended up having to switch a seat with his son.
Oh, you're
Lord.
So lucky.
The irony is that when I filled in for your show for a week, Rick Overton and I were trying to get Robin to come on as a guest, and he almost did, but then he was too busy because of his family. So
what's up with that?
There we go again. Governor, I'm excited for your show tonight because obviously it's it's an intense day in the news. Between what happened in Cairo and what happened in Libya, and now seeing the rank dishonesty from Governor Romney and Reince Priebus and half Governor Palin about what the president said and when he said it about these tragedies yesterday, I'm dying for your take on it.
Yeah, well, you know, our show, the War Room, for those who haven't seen it, is all about politics. And a war room, of course, is a metaphor for campaign office headquarters across the country. And so what the heck was going on in Mitt Romney's war room that he puts out this statement?
The usual.
The usual. Putting out a statement in desperation, really, on a day where he was criticized. He had been criticized by the right, whether it was Laura Ingraham or Rush Limbaugh, about not being strong enough. So he jumps on it. I better be strong. And before the facts come out, and it looks now like what it was is an act of desperation, him trying to look too strong and him ending up looking completely not like anybody who knows anything about diplomacy.
Yeah, so, earlier in the show, Hal Sparks was talking about how this was Mitt Romney's major play to capitalize off this strategy to make him look presidential discussing foreign policy matters. Instead, he said it's disgraceful. The Obama administration's first response was not to condemn the attacks, but to sympathize with those who waged the attacks. Of course, he's referring to the statement put out by the embassy that the White House disavowed
at 10
p.m.
last
night.
Exactly. And to use death for your own political ambitions is what's lower? Nothing.
Indeed.
Yeah. No, he's a desperate man, and he is showing it. And that, I think, people are seeing. It's one of the reasons. Obviously, there was a bump from the polls after the convention for the president. But, you know, his continual desperation, I think, is evident. I mean, not to say that there isn't a lot of a tinderbox going on over there and a lot of dicey ground for the president in this period of time, because you just cannot control what happens
in
other countries.
Well, that's especially when you keep quiet.
Well, right. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how do you respond to that as the challenger? And you look like... You should be looking like a president and not like a desperate man.
Exactly. I think you're right, Governor. I think if Governor Romney had come out and said that, you know, I stand with our president at this turbulent time, we mourn the loss of American lives, the president and I disagree on some foreign policy issues, but we're all united together,
that's
he'd look like a leader if he did that. Instead, he looked like a politician.
Exactly. I mean, it's another example of his unpreparedness to accept the role, is that he is, you know, don't you think that it just looks, again, like he is a puppet? He's a puppet of those who are begging him to do something rather than being his own, his own man.
It just brings up the great Ted Kennedy line when they were running against each other years ago, and Ted Kennedy said, I'm pro-choice and my opponent is multiple choice.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And that's one of the greatest lines.
Yes, and that's really what it's like. It's like, do this, do that. Try this, try that. Who are you?
And Governor, you make a very good point. It was Rupert Murdoch himself who said on Twitter that Romney has to get rid of some of his advisors because it seems like they just keep setting him up to look like a clown.
Well, and half of his foreign policy advisors, of course, are the neocons who advise George Bush. So take that for what it's worth.
Indeed.
It's a frightening thing. I mean, it's the one area where I think most people, right and left, would give the president a great pat on the back for having strong foreign policy. And Mitt Romney coming in trying to outflank him on the right is especially looking desperate at the moment.
The president said, I strongly condemn the outrageous attack on our diplomatic facility in Benghazi. Reince Priebus tweeted, Obama sympathizes with attackers in Egypt. Sad and pathetic.
Unbelievable. And you know, when Romney put out his statement this morning, he used the word leadership a number of times. You have to lead. This is the time when leadership is necessary. But he didn't say a word about what he would do differently.
Exactly. Exactly right. He only misled the American people about what the White House said when he was referring to a statement.
Exactly. It's time to mislead. It's time to mitlead. Exactly right.
Excellent.
Governor, I know you have plenty of Republican friends. We all do. Are your Republican friends as uncomfortable with Mitt Romney as mine are?
Well,
or would they tell you?
Republican friends. It's not like I have a whole lot of
Republican colleagues or
but, no, but actually, you know, my parents are Republicans, and they aren't, although they are the moderate Republicans, the Republicans whose party has left them. They're sort of Charlie Christian in that way. And they are uncomfortable with his apparent pandering, his, it's not that he doesn't have a spine, I think, and I think one of the things that we were talking about on our show the other night is that his whole strategy to win is to confuse the middle, and people have conflated that with a lack of spine. I think it's a strategy. When he looks like he's flip-flopping, you look at his positions, and he is like a human Rorschach test. You can see whatever you want.
You know, there's nothing, when you do stand-up, there's nothing more pathetic than a comedian who's bombing who desperately tries to pander to the audience.
It's
to
true.
Get the audience. The worse you're doing, the more you should pull back into who you are. When you start to just try and get laughs, there's nothing sadder. It exactly looks like that to me.
I think you're right, Elaine.
You can't do that. Yep. You have to find out who you are and stick to it. And he doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know what he thinks about anything. He just wants to win.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just want laughs without having a reason to get them.
It's true. Governor, I know your time is short. You're prepping for a show. You're teaching at Berkeley. You're saving the Democratic Party and
You've
the free world as we know it.
You got a stew on the stove?
I have to say, what an immense honor it was to work with you and Cenk Uygur and Governor Spitzer and Vice President Gore and, of course, Joy Behar. On the coverage, it was really, really a thrill to sit by your side and just watch you in action.
Yeah, sort of interesting the coverage that we had. You know, I'll be curious to see how people viewed it. I know, you know, the older you are, the more difficult it was to watch all these tweets go by. The younger you were, the more you're used to multitasking on many platforms, and you loved it. So it's an interesting. It'll be an interesting thing to analyze how people viewed that convention coverage. But one thing everyone was unanimous about. Was that John Fugelsang is a star.
Bless your heart, Governor. I have one last question before I release you. What did you hear from the president about your speech?
Actually, the president called me. It was so nice. He called me over the weekend and said that was really great. And the vice president did, too. That was very nice of them. I'm like, hey, you guys, you've got better things to do than call.
I don't want to say anything, but they did call me, too, after your speech. We talked it over, and then I told them to call you.
Governor Jen Granholm, I got to say, you know, I you make me proud to be an American. And aside from being a terrific governor, you have proven to be a formidable broadcaster. Everyone who cares about this country and cares about good TV needs to watch The War Room at 10 p.m. on Current TV. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
All right, John. Thanks so much.
See you
soon. Bye.
Peace.
Bye, Lane. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Classy lady, huh?
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
I mean, my goodness. She's the real deal.
Yep.
How are we doing? Is it break time, Tony? All right. You do this. I know that means break for people on the radio.
We should break then.
Okay. We'll be right back with more of Elaine Boozler trying to get to some more of your phone calls in the waning quarter hour of the one, the only, the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, a freak show!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Mashups of all time.
Gorgeous.
Here on the Stephanie Miller Show. This is Radiohead, of course. This is my favorite Radiohead song, High and Dry, but it's not really High and Dry. Listen to who this actually is here on the Stephanie Miller Show for lovers of good music and good politics. Keep it up, Tony. Keep it up. Keep it up. Here he comes. Elaine Boozler's here. Tony's here. Here we go. And... this is Marvin Gaye and Radiohead mashed up together, and this justifies the entire science of mashups, this one here. It's Sexual Healing and High and Dry.
Whoa.
Two things that don't go well together, actually. But you're listening to the Stephanie Miller Show and watching us on Current TV. Elaine Boozler, I'm so glad you got back from the Middle East safely.
Thank you. Me too. And I hope the troops all get back safely in good time. And let me tell you something. They are living hard out there. There isn't a blade of grass. There isn't a drop of rain. It was about 130 degrees every day and at night. They play basketball at night because the sun's down, but it's still 130 degrees. And they are the most prideful, beautiful, intelligent, I mean, strong. If I had a kid, I'd put him or her in the military. I'm not kidding.
I love doing military. And you were in Djibouti?
I was in Djibouti, East Africa, and Addis Ababa, and Abu Dhabi, and Kuwait, and Bahrain, and Doha, Qatar. Fascinating.
Can I tell you, my mother was so afraid of me going to those places.
And
I was
saying,
Mom, these aren't the violent places, Mom. These are the places where gringos like me can go.
I didn't order the kosher meal. What was fascinating, we got an Etihad Airlines, and, you know, they bring out the dinner, and they hand us these huge knives. And I said, apparently they're not afraid of us.
I hope you're watching this, Mom, because Elaine, you went because I had to drop out, right?
I don't know. I think we were both scheduled and then you dropped out.
I wanted to go with you so badly.
I might have filled in for you, but those were big shoes. I'm glad I didn't know.
No, stop it. I wish we'd gone together.
Well, I hope we go back. I mean, I just love the troops. And, you know, me bearing 18 days of heat is nothing for them bearing 10 years of it.
I'm going to have to get a current TV military tour of the Middle East going and bring Stephanie and Governor Grant home and you. It's that simple.
You know, I can now show you around. But I'll tell you one thing. The mistake we made was going on Ramadan because you know how Jews are so testy after one day of Yom Kippur fasting. Mm. This was a month, and I'll tell you, nobody smiled back. Or they might have, but I couldn't see under the burqas. It was fascinating to watch the women ghosts just float around.
And how do the local folks regard our American troops? Is it warmly? Is it begrudgingly?
They do not see the troops. If we go anywhere, the troops are in civvies. They do not flash it.
That was my experience in Honduras. The troops are not allowed to wear their uniforms off base.
For their own safety, really. Mm-hmm. And also because the kings don't want to advertise that they're there. It's kind of an unspoken, you know, tacit
agreement.
Same
in El Salvador. They
and yet, we keep it as the status quo.
And we keep it going. And that's the drug war in those two particular countries.
Yeah.
Rah, rah.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I'm so glad you're back and you look dynamite.
Oh, thank you very much. Well,
you had the starvation and sweat diet.
I pretty much did because I don't eat meat. And the Army does eat meat.
Yes.
So I have no complaints. And like I said, my short time there is nothing compared to people doing hard time and on rocks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my admiration is endless for these people. And, of course, my opening line every night was I'd look out and I'd say, wow, I've never seen so many good-looking people who needed money for college. And they all laughed because they went busted.
I'll tell you, it's a great line. And as much as I've always admired the military and I've had family serve, you never really appreciate their service until you go there and see how they live.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's hard
very
living.
Hard. They just take metal storage containers and turn them over. So you're in these kind of trailer-looking metal things. They just cut holes out in them and put in a compressor. Mm-hmm. And there's no regulation on the temperature. You're out in 130. You come in, it's 55 degrees.
Yeah, well, when I was in Haiti, we stayed in tents, and the tents were all air-conditioned in Haiti.
Yeah.
And they put me in the officer tent, which was pretty nice, except they had me on malaria drugs, which caused hallucinations.
Oh, I was on that. Yeah, you were
waking up screaming all night and waking up the officers.
You took the wrong drug. There's a few choices. I
had to go to the base here in L.A. I had to go to the Air Force base in L.A. to get my shots.
You sure it was an Ambien?
No.
I know I took the same thing, but I didn't take that one.
I don't take Ambien. I just watch Paul Ryan speeches. So are you enjoying Mitt Romney kind of falling apart with 7 weeks to go?
Well, no. Oh, I wish we had better people. I mean, the country deserves more, you know, and I just, you know.
I think the Republican Party deserves a better nominee,
to be honest. I think the country, you know, they say you get I mean, even on TV when you say it's all crap and people say, well, you get the entertainment you deserve if you support it. Well, you get the government you deserve. I don't think that's any longer true. I think we deserve a lot better. I think people put their hearts and souls into trying to have good government.
It was Jefferson who said that, and I pray that America doesn't get the reality TV
deserve.
He said
I could say it.
Yeah? He gave you clearance on that? He cleared you on that one?
Yeah, I asked if I could use it. But, you know, it's just terrible, and it's just so unfair to the people, I think. And it's fascinating that all the people who are against teaching evolution, as you mentioned before, are the ones who actually support their own cause. Because you look at them and go, maybe they're right. They haven't gone anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's insane.
Yeah, and people opposed to evolution need to do some evolving. I mean, and that's ironic, because they say they're Christian. Jesus didn't say a damn thing about it. Jesus' central message to humanity was, evolve.
Be nice.
Yeah.
Evolve and be nice. But
did you get to see the conventions? Did you get back in time?
I got back for a little bit of it, yes, and I did see the Democratic convention, which I thought voted much better than the Republican convention. It was sad. I mean,
we're biased. We admit we're biased, but I can say, and even Republicans say, the Democrats, they put on a better show.
Well, they do put on a better show. The music was certainly better because people were happy to have their music be used by people they support. But I'm a registered independent. I'll go wherever it's, you know, best.
And same with me.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is they, first of all, when you can't march out your past president, and he's alive, and he was the last guy you had. What does that tell you?
That's two conventions in a row.
That's scary. Mm-hmm. And then number two is they so revere Reagan, and they use the Reagan playbook. If you read Rachel Maddow's book, you know, it's fast drift. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. And her whole thing is the lies that Reagan told into the television camera. But the difference, they're doing it again. But the difference is we didn't have Google then. So
exactly.
He got away with it.
Reagan got away with a lot. Reagan once in a press conference said America gives away 93 million free meals a day.
Now, he just
like,
made up stuff.
He would just make stuff up. And Reagan, in fairness, there were moments when he was confused. There's times
when
he talked.
Now, this is early on when he really
Reagan talked
made
about when he was in
stuff.
Uniform and he never served. He just played it in the movie.
That's right. But I'm telling you, because there was no Google then, he got away with it. And they're not understanding that, look, in a minute, you look up what they've said, and they're humiliated.
Can I tell you something? Today's my baby's six-month birthday.
Congratulations.
Henry Jack was born on Mitt Romney's birthday. So Mitt Romney, happy 65th and a half birthday.
Well, don't get him a dog, then. I'll get him a dog, but don't get him a car.
Okay.
Or get him a convertible, so he has to keep the dog.
Exactly right, yeah. I mean, my son shares a birthday with Mitt Romney. I had one with Charlie Sheen. I thought I had it bad.
I think mine's a day apart from Clinton. And
that's
Madonna.
Cool.
And,
that's cool.
Yeah, I know.
My kid brother has Leonard Cohen, Stephen King, and Bill Murray on his
he
birthday.
He must be so depressed.
Oh, he's so proud of himself. I've got Charlie Sheen and Kitty Carlisle Hart. But
my son,
she was in a Marx Brothers movie.
I think he went out with her.
But she was too young. But my son shares a birthday with Mitt Romney and porn star Ron Jeremy.
There you go.
So imagine that giant tool and Ron Jeremy.
And who would you vote for and Ron Jeremy?
Elaine, where can people follow you and see you?
You know, just go to ElaineBoozer.com to see where I am. And I think I'm in Queens in a week or two. And just go to, please, talesofjoy.net. I'm in my 16th year of animal rescue. And, you know, there's beautiful things to buy that you would enjoy. And you would save a life with every purchase. And it's inexpensive.
I thank you for coming in on short notice
for an
hour.
I love you. Thank you for emailing me. I'm sorry I got in so late.
Oh, please. I'm thrilled to have you here.
Yay.
Final announcements. I'm playing in Madison, Wisconsin with Hal Sparks on the 8th. I'm doing a show with Baratunde Thurston for Penn and Dumbo, Brooklyn on Tuesday, September 18th. And the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour comes to Seattle on Saturday, the 29th. Thank you for watching. Watch Governor Granholm at 10 p.m., Governor Spitzer at 8 p.m. on Current. I'm John Fiegelsang. You're Elaine Boozer.
I am.
You're beautiful and brilliant. And we thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. This is the Stephanie Miller Show on your radio and Current TV. Peace.